This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 103. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, which has a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, 15 new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace with a free trial at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, start here. Go anywhere. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I am your host, Jim Harmer. Today, you are joined by thousands of photographers from all around the world of all different skill levels, and we're all here trying to learn photography, geek out a little bit, and talk about the thing that we love to do. And to talk about today's topics, I have my friend Darren Meller on the line.
Hey, Jim, how are you? Happy New Year to you.
I am doing great. Happy New Year to you as well. Boy, we have a lot coming down the pike in 2015. We have four free photography workshops that we're doing from Improved Photography that you can find out about at improvephotography.com/workshops is the new link. And they're totally free. We're going traveling all over the world to provide these. The one in Oregon in February is full. We have 60 people going on that one. We have one in Southwest Florida in March, and that one is full. We have 55 people going on that. We have one to Guilin, China. We still don't even know how to pronounce that in April, and that one is full. And I'm shooting a real live wedding and inviting two photographers to join me on that one, and that one is full. But I have announced a few extras in June and September, October and November, some in the United States, some out of the United States. So check that out at improvephotography.com/workshops and come shoot with us.
It is such an exciting year. 2015, you have just been working like a madman, Jim. I don't know how you do it. Do you actually sleep at all at night, or what do you do during the evenings?
Lately, I haven't been actually. But we have some questions for this episode from listeners of the podcast. So let's get talking photography.
Hi, guys. My name is Dave. I'm calling from Mainz, Germany. I've been a long-time Lightroom user, but I've always pretty much done my own organization. And I'm just wondering, after listening to the Lightroom episode that you had a couple days ago, if it is, at this point, as Darren said, too late to just let go and let Lightroom. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Also, Jim was wondering if you guys would ever be bringing back the Be a Pro Photographer webinars or the starting a photography business lessons that you once had, I think, a while back. Thanks a lot. Really enjoy the show. Take care, guys. Merry Christmas.
All right. That's some very great questions. Do you want to start out by answering his second part of the question? Then I can dive into the Lightroom side of things of whether or not it's too soon to let go.
Yeah, sure. I think for the business photography class, it probably won't come back. We've been working a lot to make the classes we have the very best that they can be. And right now I have a little bit of revamp work to do on the intermediate class and the flash photography class. So right now I'm focused on those. I want to make those the very, very best that they can be. I want to make sure they're up to the standard of the Lightroom class and the Photoshop classes that have been super, super popular. So right now we're working on that. We are going to definitely bring lots of new training in 2015. And we have some ideas for some ways that we can do that at a lower cost that we're working on. So probably aren't going to be bringing back the business class, but I'm glad you're interested in it. We do have a lot of free information of articles on starting a photography business on improvephotography.com, though.
Yes, that's one resource that should not be overlooked, and I definitely would send you in that direction as well. But in regards to the Lightroom question, I really don't think that it's a question of if it's too late ever to let go and let Lightroom start to organize your files. I think that it just depends on how they're organized is going to determine how long of a process is and how clunky of a process it's going to be to import your files into Lightroom and try to maintain the edits that you have to those final files, especially if you've baked in JPEGs, whether you have Photoshop top and you've still have some images where you haven't merged your layers together. Certain factors like that are really going to impact how clunky of a process is, but I don't think it's ever too late. It took me about 2 weeks to migrate from Aperture to Lightroom when I first started.
I didn't realize you had started on Aperture. I forgot that.
Yeah, I was one of the people who was all gung-ho about Aperture, and then I read an article from Improved Photography, and I kept seeing all these really cool things being done in Lightroom, and I'm like, Aperture, it's okay, but it's just, to me, I just didn't like the fact that I couldn't find my original file and differentiate it between the edited one, and that's why I like Lightroom, because it is a very powerful, nimble little beast, but it also stores your files very neatly, so it's a nimble beast, but it also has a little set of order to it that I just absolutely love.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's interesting. And I guess Aperture's kind of a done deal now that Apple said they won't be releasing future updates. But what did you think of it when you did have it? Did you feel like the editing capabilities were on par with Lightroom?
I thought they were on par, but one interesting thing that my dad and I found out, especially because he held on to Aperture a little bit longer than I did, was that its raw file previews were not sometimes as clear, and then it would actually be the complete opposite, to where you're looking at the JPEG free preview of a file or something that you imported into either Lightroom or Aperture, and depending on the software and how it read that file, you would think that a cruddy photo was good, or vice versa, that a good photo was cruddy towards the end, and it just didn't really give you that certainty. So I switched over mainly due to file organization and just the way that the Adobe engine had my raw files displayed on there, but it was not a bad workflow. I mean, I was able to pump images out rather quickly, but still there's just some clunky things about it, and I have heard updates about supposedly the Photos app integrating some things from Aperture down the road. So I mean, that's something that other artists out there like Derek Story talk about, and he's an advocate for the Photos app. So who knows what Apple has up their sleeve, but I think the way that everyone should be going right now is Adobe, just from personal experience.
And what is the deal with the Photos app? Have you heard anything new about that? I'm surprised we haven't seen anything.
I've heard a bunch of new things, and Derek was really talking about that. I listen to his podcast as well when I'm traveling and whatnot, and he was so amped about hearing some announcements here in quarter one, which we're just in the beginning of quarter one 2015, so something could be announced soon, but they didn't really tease it when they released, you know, anything new with Apple, and Yosemite came out, which is the newest version of Apple's operating system with Mac OS X. But supposedly what Derek's been teasing is we're going to get the full capability of what Aperture meant to be back, but it's going to kind of start back at the beginning, where Aperture was kind of a one-off program, and then as it matured with more and more updates like Lightroom has, then eventually we'll start to see a program that's more adoptable and has more utility. But I really don't want to wait through that process. I mean, I would rather have a program that's good and ready to go out of the gate.
Right. And like, what kind of message does that send to the users? Like, we photographers, we just want software that's going to work, and then mm-hmm. it's going to work for a long time, because you don't want to put all your work into editing your photos and then like, oh, well, you may or may not be able to take your edits and move them over to the new software. We're just switching. See you guys. Thanks for paying your $70 all these years. And they go to this new software that's not ready yet, but they're telling us that it's eventually going to come. Like, who's going to be excited to jump on the bandwagon of the new software if they just killed the old one that you put so much time into? So there's no way I'm going to be using the Photos app when it comes out.
Yes, and hindsight is 2020. Like, when you and Dustin were thinking about and talking about how Adobe was switching gears and going to the Creative Cloud from the box format thing, I was actually one of those guys kind of grinding my fist together saying, this is actually a good thing. Just embrace it. It's going to be really cool. And now that I'm an Adobe Creative Cloud subscriber, I have that peace of mind that, yes, I have money coming out of my bank account each month, but it's a lot less than buying a Creative Suite version 6 like we used to have to. And also, if Adobe does come up with updates or I buy a new camera, it's only a matter of time before I get those updates downloaded to my computer. And if they decide to throw a cool new tool into Photoshop, Lightroom, or any other program I use within the suite, I get it right away. I don't have to rush out to the store or look on websites for, you know, patches and things along those lines.
Yeah, I'm interested to see when Creative Suite 7 is going to be coming out. We should be looking at it pretty close. Now, will there be a Creative Suite 7? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe there will never be a CS7 because now everything is Creative Cloud. But we haven't seen any major updates to the programs in a while. You know, we had the CS 6.5 come out, but we haven't seen the next iteration or any major releases on Creative Cloud to the software itself. You know, they've been doing a lot of other things, but we haven't seen, you know, the next version of Photoshop with new features and stuff. So I've got to think that's going to be coming out soon.
I would hope so. And also, when it comes down to it, these companies need to start thinking about what something that Dustin coined on the show, which is helpography, which brings us to our next topic. Because Christmas, we definitely talked about Christmas and family, and we talked about how it just really was the time of year to just focus on what really mattered. And I just really wanted to take a moment to share a quick story about what I did this Christmas. I traveled to Arizona, as everybody knows, and I had some listeners of the podcast, like Eric and Steven, who are joining us on a couple trips here with the travel group, asked me what I was up to. Just due to schedule and whatnot, I just wasn't able to make it out. And I saw this post come across Facebook, this Facebook group called Nebraska Photographers Network, and this young photographer was selling all of her gear, and everybody was offering her prices for her gear. They're saying, okay, here's my camera, here's my lens breakdown. And I was the only person who just said, why are you selling this? I teach photography, I do a podcast, and I hate to see someone walk away from the craft. And she responded back, well, it's not really by choice. My daughter was sick. You know, I don't really want to go into it, but essentially I'm doing what a parent would do, and I'm willing to drop my dream to go ahead and take care of my daughter. So I got together with the leader of the site named Pat Bryan, and it's such a cool thing. And you don't even have to be from Nebraska. If you look up Nebraska Photographers Network group on Facebook, it's such a cool area where you can get creative feedback on your work, and it doesn't matter where you're from. It's just a very bunch of cool, humble photographers. So long story short, we decided to get a fund together for this girl, and we were able to raise the amount of money she was trying to sell her camera for, and it just felt so good to be able to give the gift of photography away. And I've just been promoting the Help Photography website that we're talking about for helping students learn photography in the public school systems, things like that. It's just, I think that as photographers, and when the Christmas season comes around, it really just gets those gears grinding in my mind and my heart that say, how can I give back to the community that has definitely blessed me so much over this past year?
That is totally cool. So you saw, you know, how much money she needed to raise from her gear, and you got people to give donations so she wouldn't have to sell it. Is that what?
Yeah, exactly. I just posted on the page and I said, hey, if it's okay with the admins, and I tagged the, you know, Pat and some other admins on that page on Facebook and said, is there any way we can put together a fund site just so she doesn't have to do this? And we didn't hear from her all day. We wanted to make sure to get her permission to talk about it on the podcast and on the site, because we just didn't want to overstep our boundaries. But in the same respect, she was just lost for words, because she said some prayers of the day. She said, I just didn't know there were people out there like you guys. And literally within 18 hours, they raised $1,000 of the $2,000 that she needed, because they were just tossing what they could at the medical bills, and it just wasn't enough. And so she just broke down and said, hey, what can I sell? And then she decided to sell her gear. And then some other friends and I last minute got together, and it was like $1,010 on Christmas Eve. And a bunch of us just flooded the site and got it over to the $2,000 mark. And it was just really cool to do that anonymously and not really take credit for it. I won't say who the friends were, but it just was so cool to be able to raise that last $1,000 within a matter of probably 30 to 45 minutes for.
That is really cool, Darren. That's awesome that you stepped up and found a way to help her. That's really neat.
I think that that's what photography is all about. I think that that's why the show is something that I take so seriously, and it's something that I'm so passionate about. And honestly, when people ask me when I travel what type of photography I do, I say I do a little bit of everything, because the last thing I want is for someone to say, hey, do you know how to freeze action with a sports shot? And my answer can't really be, I don't know. So I think I'm very, very privileged and grateful to be able to shoot any type of photography and learn from everyone I work with, including those on the travel groups when I get to work with you. And we definitely listen to the feedback from everybody. So every day is a learning experience. And I think that's why I refuse to call myself an expert, because each day I wake up just eager to knowing something new about photography.
Oh, that's really cool. And the other thing that we've done at Improve Photography to kind of give back to the photography community is we've been working on a project with the readers and listeners of the website to donate what camera gear you have to improve photography, and then we're putting it all together in a bundle to give to schools that need it that don't have the gear that they need for the students. And we had just a lot of people have sent in boxes of cameras and lenses and tripods and just a lot of camera gear. I'm waiting. I know that I've been in contact with a few who are still sending in cameras and stuff. So we haven't bundled that yet together to give to a school, because we want to kind of get everything together and make sure it's kind of a coherent bundle of stuff and not just random things that don't all work together. So we're waiting to get those last few donations, and then we're going to take that to a school. I think that's a neat way that the whole Improved Photography community has donated to help. If you still have gear, you can go to improvephotography.com/help, and you can send that in to us, and we'll put that together and get it to students who really do need the cameras.
Yes, it is so awesome. I have actually been pumping that out to social media, and there's actually, if you don't have any gear within your house, and this is something I just thought of now, if you don't have any gear sitting in your closet, if you have a local buy, sell, and trade website, post a link to that to the Improved Photography website with that page where they can explain and find out, hey, if I can't sell this piece of gear, at least I know it's going to benefit someone, and since it's going to a school, it could be a potential tax write-off.
Yeah, that's great. Well, this episode of the Improved Photography Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace has a ton of new features. With Squarespace 7, it's easier than ever to build your website. For a long time, I did my website the old-fashioned way with HTML and CSS, and I was able to tweak it, get it how I wanted, and then I just never updated it. I would go do a new shoot, and I would never go put the photos up because it took forever, just to create a new page, copy and paste the code in there, get the photo sized right, put it up there. And then every time something happened wrong on the website, I had to work on it and get the code just right. Then when everybody started going on mobile devices and iPads to websites, then I was like, ah, great. Now I got to make a whole mobile and iPad version of the website so it looks good on other devices, because I get about 50% of the traffic now is all on mobile devices. It's incredible how much it's blown up. But then I finally discovered Squarespace on the recommendation of Rick Salmon and Juan Pons. And once I finally switched over, life became a lot easier. It looks exactly how I want it to, actually better than my design was. It runs fast. I don't have to worry about the hosting. They take care of all that for me. It works good on mobile devices. It's just one thing that I don't have to worry about, and it's cheap. The plans start at $8 a month. For what you're getting, it really is incredible what they do. So be sure to check out Squarespace 7. And you can go to use offer code IMPROVE to get 10% off your subscription when you sign up for Squarespace.
Yes, and we want to thank Squarespace for their support of the Improved Photography Podcast. And thank you so much for making this episode possible. And let's move on to the next topic. I kind of been teasing about this with flash photography when talking about the senior photo shoot. And one thing I noticed when I was up there in that studio was the fact that when we were actually shooting, there was a lot of ambient light up there. So we just closed the blinds. And we were planning out a basement in our house to set it up as a studio for an indoor project, since it's about 5 degrees outside right now, not the best outdoor photographing temperatures. So we decided, instead of opening up these windows in the basement and adding more light, I actually find it's more beneficial, especially when I'm picturing the outcome of the image in my head and what post-production I'm doing, to shoot in the complete dark, use constant lighting, and then use speed lights with diffusers of different various types to get the exact lighting that I want. Is that something that you did when you were in the studio with Dustin? I know you're doing a lot more on-location photography lately, Jim, but I think shooting in the dark gives you the most control.
I definitely agree that it gives you the most control. We had our studio two different ways because we were in two different buildings, and the first building we were in had just tons of natural light, just like huge windows wrapping around half of the building. And so, we were using flash, but you definitely had to work with the ambient light because there was so much of it. There was no way you were going to block all of it out. So I guess that's what some people call a natural light studio, but we were enhancing it with flash as well. And I really liked working that way. The only times that it became a problem was when the sun would actually set, and it was, later in the day, like 7 o'clock during the summer, the sun was just pouring through those windows, and it was kind of a hard light. I didn't like that. But the way that the studio was turned most of the day until, you know, 6-7 o'clock, it was just fine. A couple times I wanted to shoot, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, and it was sunset, and it was just warm light coming in, and it was, just looked weird when you're trying to shoot on a white background. So there were problems with it sometimes. But then we went to the other studio that was more like what you're describing. You know, it was closed light. You know, a lot of times you'll go into a studio and everything's painted black. They don't want any reflections. They want it totally dark in there and just work with the flashes. I actually didn't like working that way. You know, it's really just personal preference, but I didn't like working that way. I just felt like so much of what I was doing was trying to fill in shadows because the shadows were just so deep when you only have one light. Whereas in the natural light studio, it was already, you know, fairly evenly lit to begin with. And then if I wanted to add moody shadows and stuff, I just cranked up the flash power so that the ambient was kind of overrun. So my personal preference is different. It's to work in natural light, or not work with natural light, but to have some natural light in the studio and then just enhancing it with flash.
Ah, that's definitely a good point, but I'm still going to stick with the constant light spot behind the subject, and definitely, to me, I know that the YN560s that we recommend are so inexpensive, but I was reading through the user manual one day when I was feeling kind of geeky, and it said if you use the higher flash powers, it's going to decrease your recycle time, eat your battery faster, and then possibly shorten the length of the flash. So I said, heck, I found that I like shooting in the dark, so why not keep it up?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So how are you, where are you putting your constant lights?
My constant lights, I'll put one behind the subject for that backlighting, off to the side out of the frame. And then I'll put, if I need another constant light for hair light, I'll either put it, if we're looking at it from a clock, I guess I'd do it 10 and 2, like when driving, similar to that position and aiming it to where, if I'm picturing the sunlight coming in post-production and wanting to put like a graduated filter inside Lightroom to make it look like the model is looking in the sun, I'll put it off to where the model is looking off to the right-hand side. And then I might take another constant light, and I'll put it above them for a hair light, just depending on where I'm filling those shadows. So I can definitely empathize with, you know, trying to fill in those shadows or trying to make it moody, but I just soften up my fill light from my big diffuser, like that's either on the Einstein or using just a big softbox with a bunch of speed lights. But that's really how I handle the shadows and just getting that nice smooth light over. But I will not be painting my walls solid black. I do want to throw some cool backgrounds in there, maybe some barn wood like my friend John's studio and things like that. But for the most part, I just don't see a completely black studio working for me either. I'd probably be creeped out and I never shoot photos down there.
Welcome to my dungeon.
Exactly.
Welcome to the photo dungeon. Well, come on in. Water's fine.
Exactly.
Well, that's interesting. That's the first decision you got to make when you're shooting in a studio is, are you going to allow in natural light at all or any kind of ambient light, or are you trying to kill off the ambient light? And I guess you can see between the two of us how we differ on that. I don't know. There's definitely not a right or wrong to it, but I like working with a little bit of natural light. I find that it makes it easier.
Oh, for sure. And the different approaches, as long as it gets you the desired result. That's one thing that I come across a lot is I'll give someone a thumbs up if they find a different way to get something done, but as long as it ends up the way they want. And speaking of not getting things done the way they want, I'm not in love with the Sony A6000 that I picked up before Christmas.
I was so sad to hear that when you said it, because you were really excited to get the A6000 and it's had such great reviews, but it sounds like it hasn't worked out real well for you. Tell me about that.
Well, it is everything that I didn't want on that left side of the paper for the cons. I did buy the Wasabi Power extra batteries. That's fine. I'm not finding issues with battery power. But the focusing to me was just so slow. I was doing some street photography. I did have some great shots that came out. I'm doing some street photography work in downtown Phoenix. But there's this girl. She came on one of those long skateboards, and she was coming across the street after the walk sign. She's smoking a cigarette. It was just a real moody shot. And she wasn't moving that closely. And I tried different things. I put it on autofocus continuous with a different girl because it seemed like they were just putting girls on longboards to skate skate by me all day in that part of the area, but still I just couldn't lock focus in. And I even sat down and took time to read the manual on the A6000, because I'm like, all right, I'm not going to be one of those stubborn guys who never looks at the manual or looks at the online manual to see if I know every mode and know the ins and outs of the camera. And after I removed that excuse, I went out and shot again, and I can't get action. Birds in flight, almost impossible. If I'm shooting something still, that's fine. If I'm doing night photography, like I did the Phoenix Zoo lights that they do, it works for just general photography. I would definitely recommend it to someone who just doesn't want stuff moving, but still, that's really hard, because if you're a portrait photographer, chances are you're going to photograph some toddlers and they don't like to hold still very long, or a dog in a family photo. Things along those lines just worry me, because the focus just, it, there's a lot of hunting going on.
Yeah, So the A6000 is totally out. Are you using it all, or just cutting it out for action, or what?
I'm just going to cut it out for specialized things. Like if I know that I'm going to be doing stuff where there's a potential for action, I'm just going to bring my huge gear bag along with me that has my two DSLRs. But for the most part, it's just going to be a camera for sake of never leaving a camera behind. And it does do good portrait work if you put it on a tripod and you have you don't even have to put it on a tripod, but if you have your subject, you know, holding still, if it's an adult or teenage subject that'll hold still, it does have a nice look with those photos. But and I'll still bring it to China, just because it's probably not going to be as big of a target when we're doing street photography for someone to look at taking from me. But for the most part, I'm just not in love with it. I did follow up, and hopefully we'll have Tony Northrup's wife, Chelsea, on the show to discuss their thoughts on the A7S and the A7 version 2. But I talked to him, and both of us are kind of thinking, what's everyone so excited about with these alpha cameras at the moment? But you know what I heard in the background? I heard an IMAX sound, so I want to hear about that.
You did. I've got to multitask a little bit, because just minutes ago, the UPS man finally came and delivered my brand new iMac 5K. We've mentioned this a couple times on the show. It's usually we're talking about cameras and lenses, but for photography, this is like a computer built for a photographer. It has a 5K screen. That's the highest resolution screen you can buy, period. It's just incredible. So, if you have an older $500 laptop from a year or so ago, it may not even be HD. A newer, more expensive laptop is HD. It's, 1920 by 1080 resolution. So that's 1920 pixels on the long edge, and sometimes a little bit higher. But this computer is 5K. It's not, that would be 2K is 1920, almost 2000 pixels on the long edge. This is 5K. So I think that's what, four times the resolution, or even five times the resolution, because obviously it's kind of an exponential to add another 1,000 pixels on the long edge is adding a lot more pixels total. So it's just a huge, huge number of pixels on this screen. And so for photography, where, you're trying to judge sharpness and stuff, to see it on a beautiful big 5K screen, I'm really, really excited for this, and I've just plugged it in. I can't make any judgments, any opinion on it yet, but my wife definitely gets Wife of the Year award for buying it for me for Christmas. I had no idea that she was going to get it, and so she got it for me for Christmas, and we've been out and traveling and stuff, so I just finally am able to plug it in, and I ordered one that's a little bit different, so it just finally got here. Really anxious to try it out.
Well, I can make a judgment, and I can say that Emily has turned me into the number one jealous employee of Jim's right now, because I'm on the 27-inch with 25,060 pixels, and you're looking about double the pixels on the long edge of mine, but I'll get by. I'll limp along.
Yeah, limp along. It's still a really nice machine. The iMacs are just so awesome, and they're really good Windows computers as well. Apple computers, I've really personally enjoyed, but there are some really nice Windows computers. Coincidentally, none of them at 5K yet, but there are some nice 4K monitors out there as well.
Yes, and speaking of newer technology, have you heard anything happening at CES, or do you think that they're going to wait for something else. I mean, I'm looking at CES and there's not really any announcements as far as photography. Are we going to have to wait for camera and photo imaging show of 2015, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, it's interesting. We usually see big camera announcements about this time of year. In January, when it's the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. And you know, the show just started today on Monday, but we just haven't seen a whole lot. And a lot of the announcements are starting to roll out. We haven't seen a whole lot. And so I'm wondering if it's going to be a little bit before we see any major announcements in the photography industry, maybe not until CP Plus next month.
I could see that happening, and we usually we do a dude out of the week in each episode, but before we do that, I'd like to do a dude don't, and that's...
the first ever in 2000... Actually, we should make that a regular feature. We should have a dude add and a do don't of every episode.
I like that idea. Let's do it. And my do don't is actually happened this week, and you might have success with them out there. I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but my personal experience, I am only going to shoot Lexar and SanDisk memory cards, I got home from shooting those zoolite pictures that I was talking about, and I actually made it out to shoot some landscape shots of this canyon just outside of Arizona, Phoenix near Roosevelt Lake. And I got home, imported all the files separately, keyworded them, and on the last set of imports, it's just like that camera was just running as fast as it could to the finish line in a marathon, and then it just had a heart attack. And then I plugged it back into the MacBook Pro, and it said, opened up the first aid thing and said, yeah, this is unreadable. I put it back in the 6D where I formatted in camera, did everything right as far as what we could do to try to keep our discs from not going corrupt. And it said that I needed to either reformat it because it was unreadable. And I, at this point in time, PNY doesn't really have, from what I've seen, any customer support or any way of helping me out. There's definitely some third-party recovery tools out there for recovering images off there. And I think I did get 99% of the images off there. But if that was a paid shoot, like a senior portrait shoot, a wedding, etc., oh my gosh, I would have had a heart attack.
Yeah, that's for... How old was the card?
It is actually less than 6 months old. I actually took four of those PNY 64 gigabyte cards to Europe with me, and that was one of them that I bought in June. So it's less than 6 months, or it's roughly 6 months old now.
Huh, that's surprising, because I see even with the name brand cards, when that card's about a year and a half, more like 2 years old, I don't trust it anymore because they just start, I don't know, they just get wonky. After about 2 years, I just kind of retire the card and say, I don't want problems, and go to another one. They can last a long, long time. I'm not saying that every card will, but I have, well, let me see if this is true. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had problems with a card while it was still new. So that's surprising to see, you know, only 6 months in.
It is. And one thing that I think we should do is I'll throw over in the show notes, if you head over to improvephotography.com/103, there'll be a link there. And Jeff Harmon, one of our editors, actually created an awesome article about memory cards and the do's and don'ts when picking them up and reading what number on the memory card means anything and what number is exaggerated. It's just a great article that's very well written that'll help you get steered in the correct direction of which card to buy. And I hadn't heard the thing about waiting over a year. I mean, waiting about a year to retire the memory card, but I can definitely see why with all the times that I'm formatting in camera, making adjustments to it. It has to wear out eventually. It's made by man and it's going to fail eventually.
Yeah, I for me, it's at 2 years. As soon as it hits that 2 year mark, I get rid of the memory card. You know, except when I'm recording the podcast, I record into an MP into a audio recorder onto a memory card, just a regular SD card, and I only let that one go about a year because that one I'm using just constantly going in and out of devices and stuff, and so I don't want to lose a recording, and so I always do that one a little bit shorter. But I find that, you know, by having that definite retirement schedule ends up fixing a lot of problems. When a card is brand new, just took it out of the package, I don't really trust it for a month. I want to make sure it's not a dud right away. So if I'm doing anything, you know, really important that I definitely can't lose, I'll use a card that it's a little bit, you know, more tried and true. But after I've used it five or six times and I know the card's okay, I trust it for about 2 years and then it's gone.
I would go that route as well. And do you have a do don't this week? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I have a do dad that I'd like to talk about. And it's kind of funny. It reminds me of when you said your do dad 1 week was sunglasses.
Well, I don't have a do don't. So let's hear your do dad.
Mine happens to be very simple. It's photography magazines, and I'll go ahead and link you over to just a website that shows the top 30 photography magazines. And I picked up a photography magazine. I believe it was Popular Photography, and read it in the grocery store as my parents were walking around shopping. And there's so much insight in there, and you get all these different opinions, just like reading a photo blog. And to me, it just felt awesome to go back and actually pick something up that was paper and tangible, and I could actually feel the pages turn. It was almost looking at film prints coming out once again, and I just found a huge value reading that magazine. So I'll be subscribing to a photography magazine soon, because I think there's some information there that's probably often overlooked.
Yeah, very cool. My doodad for this week is not so much a gadget, but this time it's a resource. And that's the SLR Lounge podcast. It's a video podcast. But it's a new podcast that's up. And so check for it on the iTunes store and stuff. That's the SLR Lounge. They're taking some of the content they had on their YouTube channel and putting it out as a video podcast. So if you listen to any video podcasts, definitely go out and check it out. They have some great information on there, and it's worth a look.
Very cool. I'll be adding that to my podcast listen list.
Well, Darren, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and we will see you in a week.